Welcome to the Context Machine, episode number 654. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. Brian, did you know that we have a website and you can check us out there?
Contextmachine.io. So interesting.
I know.
Contextmachine.io. Well, you can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon at Context Machine, or you can even email us at podcast machine podcast. That's contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Top man.
Bless our hearts.
Yes. Top man. Right. So you had let's talk about the second topic first.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the inconsequential thing and then we'll get to what's important.
No, right. Okay, fair enough. Right. So we're going to talk about AI and Apple because it's all like everyone's all a tither about Apple and AI after the earnings report this week.
Mm-hmm.
Because Apple jumped 6% today.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of down, but it jumped quite a bit. And that's largely because I mean, all right. So let's start at the fact that we have seen so many reports about people saying that Apple is behind on AI. And it so reminds me of Apple being behind on netbooks.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, in tablets.
Mm-hmm.
And smartphones. I mean, no one's going to beat BlackBerry. Why does anyone need to do a smartphone?
Right. And how could anyone step into this space, the smartphone space, that hasn't already made a phone? Because, you know, that's complicated and that's hard.
Yeah. And goodness, why make your own hardware? Why make your own hardware, man? Microsoft has proven that the winning combination is to license your operating system. Everyone knows this.
Right. Never mind the irony of Microsoft started making their own hardware.
Yeah, well, right. And yes. So I'm getting shades of all the times from people saying that Apple is behind in AI. And also the fact that we're talking generative AI, which is nothing more than a regurgibot.
I love that. Regurgibot.
It's a regurgibot. Generative AI is a regurgibot. And
regurgibot. You know, I'm actually seriously writing that down because I like it so much.
Oh, thank you. I did come up with it. I will accept your homage later.
Yeah.
So anyway, I definitely have issues with generative AI. Obviously, mm-hmm. we've talked about that from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, the fact that the models are all built on stolen data. Most of the model, all the shipping generative AI products are all built on stolen data.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that it's stolen data. I don't like anyone using generative AI for commercial purposes in particular. Because it's a stolen product. And, you know, and obviously I'm personally invested in that because I'm a writer and we're already seeing, well, there was a publisher. I didn't mention this to you. There's a 22-year-old independent publisher that closed its doors this week because they are being inundated with AI written crap.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of other pressures on independent publishers right now, all because of Amazon's race to the bottom. But, and I am keenly aware of having to compete as a writer with crap written by a generative AI engine, by people who couldn't write a thing if their life. Life depended on it. let me mark that time.
I'm laughing only because you made yourself have to edit.
Yes, I did. That's kind of funny. So, and the same thing with music, and the same thing with video. I'm like. It is so, and don't get me wrong. Don't get me get started with all the harm that can be done with generative AI right now.
It is
absolutely happening, and that it is so scary. But so I definitely to have people freaking out about Apple being quote unquote behind on generative AI when we know that Apple has been heavily invested in machine learning, which is all the regurgipot AI is not artificially intelligent. It's a regurgipot. And machine learning
in this sense,
yes. And machine learning is much more. Anyway, Apple's been working on machine learning for a long time, and we don't know what Apple is planning. But Tim Cook got everyone all hot and bothered.
Okay, so Brian, I find it really interesting and not surprising that people weren't talking about Apple being behind in AI and machine learning until the whole LLM craze took off. And I think we can really thank OpenAI and their ChatGPT product for that, for good or ill. And then at that point, all of a sudden it's like, oh, Apple's behind. And
I think we were getting a little bit of that, but nowhere near the volume for sure until ChatGPT in particular.
Well, and see, the thing is, Apple has been developing and rolling out their AI and ML tools or features in ways that benefit us without being this
the front facing LLM craze. The public facing regurgipot.
Right.
For example, computational photography alone is enormous. The things that iPhone can do with photography are they're truly sci-fi.
Yeah, and that is showing that Apple has been very active in this space for a long time. And the whole thing with LLMs, it's the kind of thing that if you understand how these systems have been working, can very easily leave a bad taste in your mouth because of what they do and how they work. So Apple getting into a space like that, that's not the kind of a product they want to have. Therefore, they have been working in a different way to get us to that point. And it's sounding like what Apple is bringing to the table with the generative AI sort of thing is going to be something that does not abuse our privacy. And in most cases, or at least a lot of cases, doesn't even have to leave the device to do its thing.
Right. My question, though, we've had at least semi-credible reports that Apple is in talks with, was it Microsoft? It was OpenAI and either Microsoft or Google.
OpenAI and Google.
Right. About engaging their products at some point in the consumer chain on Apple side. And first of all, I'm honestly shocked by that, not knowing what it is. And secondly, I do wonder what it is.
Well, it's possible what Apple is doing is licensing technologies, licensing models without licensing the data sets.
Yeah, but those data sets were still built on stolen products. That's the problem.
But yes, but if they're licensing an LLM model, that's different from licensing the data.
Yes, okay? But the model was still built on, I said data set earlier. I'm sorry. The model was built on stolen data.
No, the model is the software that
the model
that
was
abuses
trained.
The stolen data.
Right, but I don't think that's
where we're having our problem with our communication here, because I'm talking about the model without training. You're talking about a trained model.
No, I'm so actually
Apple can
saying
take a model
that you can't
and
train
use their own data.
You, but the work that OpenAI has put into it was built on training models on stolen data. I don't think
you can
escape the fact that OpenAI was built on stolen data.
That is a fair statement.
And yeah, so I actually don't believe for a second that Apple will be deploying stolen data sets. I don't believe that for us. That's not my concern. I also have zero concern about my privacy with Apple, at least under Tim Cook.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not my problem either. My problem is I am really curious. I wonder if Apple has been in talks with these companies just to find out where they are.
That's possible.
It seems like Apple has access to enough of its own data from people opting in to Siri's thing that you can opt into.
Mm-hmm.
That admittedly Apple didn't have. It was. I don't even know if it was opt out at first, but it's been opt in for a while.
I think it's always been opt-in, but I'm not 100% certain. Where Apple had their problem was when it was revealed that they had actual people listening to some of the voice requests from through the Yes Lady databases to help refine and improve performance and accuracy. And people didn't know that they're and it was through a third-party company. So we as users didn't know that someone might actually be listening to things we say.
And I hate to be the guy that gives Apple a pass, but I feel like that was an execution mistake on Apple's part versus a cultural statement on problems. In terms of our privacy. In other words, like everything that OpenAI does, it's very clear that they don't give a crap about doing the right thing. So they're never going to get a pass from
me. That's a fair statement too.
And I suspect that was a combination of oversight or It was absolutely a mistake, but it was a mistake that was not in keeping with Apple's usual policies.
And at least Apple once this was revealed, Apple's like, oh, okay, well, nope, can't have this happening. And they took steps to address the problem.
Yes, they did. So privacy is not my issue, and Apple deploying stolen data sets is not my issue. And even Apple, I don't know what they're going to do.
I have a question for you.
Yep.
Which is probably a wrong question to ask right after you say, I don't know what Apple's going to do. Since you are our resident expert on cook code, meaning being able to ferret out what Tim Cook means from something that he says.
Yep. Thank you.
What do you think it means when Tim responded to the question about AI during the earnings report, is saying he sees a key opportunity?
Well, so I'm going to actually channel one, what's his name? Jason Aiton from an Inc.com article. That's INC.com in relation to the rest of our show.
I'll make sure there's a link to this piece in our show notes.
Right. So he quotes Tim Cook. He says, Tim Cook said, quote, I don't want to get in front of our announcements, obviously. I would just say that we see generative AI as a very key opportunity across our products. And we believe that we have advantages that set us apart, and we'll be talking more about it as we go through the weeks ahead. And the thing is that Jason beat me on his interpretation. And he said, this is the writer for Inc.com, Jason Aiton. He said, quote, look, I know that sounds like something that you say without saying much of anything, but in the context of Apple, a company that rarely says anything at all, it actually says a lot, unquote. That's a hilarious sentence. Quote, Apple CEO is nothing if not intentional about what he says. He does not make throwaway statements about anything, let alone things he sees as a quote-unquote key opportunity. That's as close as he comes to saying, yes, we're focusing everything at the company on figuring this out because we believe it's the future of all our products. So I agree with him entirely, and I think he beat me to it, and I don't need to add anything.
Okay. By the way, I think that this Inc. article is really well done.
Yeah, it really is. This is it's funny, man. In the last several weeks, like, I have seen all kinds of email notifications for articles at what's that site? Why am I drawing a blank?
Seeking Alpha?
Seeking Alpha, yeah.
I just know you.
Thank you.
That seemed like the site.
People like finding ways to, I mean, it's almost like the New York pitch bot, you know.
The New York Times pitch bot. I loved that.
Saying something and then coming up with a way to make it bad for Apple. That and the other mainstream coverage about Apple being behind in AI, I think it's all garbage, and this guy seems to get Apple. And he certainly seems to get Tim and understand the importance of what Tim says and, you know, what he's saying when he says anything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, I know that was insightful on my part.
You brought insight, and thank you for that.
Yeah, I suspect I don't. I guess. All right, here's what I think that Apple will not do.
Okay,
I don't think that Apple is going to have a write me a poem bot or write me a novel bot or write me anything. I I suspect that Apple's generative AI stuff is going to be used for interpreting the data that we have. That's what I suspect.
I think that's a safe bet. I could see Apple doing something Grammarly, where on device you can get additional help with making sure that you are formatting your documents correctly, proper punctuation, proper grammar. But I think what you're looking at, that's a big part of what Apple's going to do.
And I think on the photography side, I'm sure that Apple is going to do something along the lines of Adobe's generative AI fill in Photoshop, which, as I think we've discussed on this show, turns out that Adobe's product was built on, at least somewhat on, non-ethically sourced material.
I think, well, first, that sucks. But I think that this is a real problem a lot of companies are going to be dealing with for a long time. And companies that want to make sure that they're ethically sourcing the content that they're using. Right now, we have all of these dude bro companies that don't have a business model that allows them to create their systems without stealing.
Well, and we also have some dude bro companies that have large amounts of user data that they can sell to companies developing their LLM or large picture models. Mm-hmm. I don't, what do we call those?
I kind of like that, an LPM, a large picture model.
Yeah. So anyway, that is essentially another problem for me, is that ethically sourcing, like, so Apple paying some dude bro company for access to stuff, or Y Combinator and Reddit. Paying Reddit for posts, which Apple didn't do. Someone else did that. So that they can use those posts for training. I don't think that's ethically sourced, because the users weren't consulted or paid. That's just the dude bros making some money. That's the dude bros, some dude bros paying some other dude bros some money.
Yeah.
And that's not ethical, but I think from the standpoint of the way most people would look at it, they would call that ethically sourced because they paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And didn't
we talk just recently about one of the online image storage and reseller
that was companies? In the last couple of shows, which puts it sometime in the last 3 months.
Right. Yeah. They changed their terms of service so they can sell all of the content that you have uploaded.
Yeah.
And
you're not making any money from it.
No, you're not making money from it.
So, you know, why were we talking about this? I'm getting off on a tangent.
We were talking about all of this because Tim Cook's made some comments about Apple and AI.
Oh, right. I was talking about the photography stuff. I'm sure that Apple will be adding a generative fill to, at the very least, iOS 18, probably. And it'll be a generative fill where you can basically, you know, expand your background or take things out of your background, which, you know, you can already do some of that. But I'm assuming that's going to be the kind of focus that Apple has with generative AI. I really don't think that Apple's focus is ever going to be on offering a Regurgibot.
I'm with you. I just thought of a feature Apple could include in this that could go just great or horribly wrong. Let's say you're in a relationship and you break up. And so
this is going great so far.
I know, isn't this great? Happy, happy stories. So you go and change that contact card for that person so that, you know, like maybe you tag them as your partner or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. And you change that. And so now your iPhone says, oh, I see that this person, you're no longer in a relationship with them. Do you want me to take them out of your photos?
Mm-hmm.
And you say yes. And then it uses its smart fill thing to, well, first it identifies all the photos that has that person and then scrubs them out of the images for you.
Yeah, it could do that. You know, it's like, I would like to see some machine learning brought to password safety. So, you know, 1Password already gives you, and so does Keychain.
Mm-hmm.
1Password already gives you a list of places where they've determined that your passwords have been compromised. Your password
could be compromised. Yep.
Right?
That's not an AI thing.
No. Well, I'm sure there's some machine learning in it. It's a
database, and it's just comparing your logins.
Yeah, I'm sure they're using some machine learning in that. Surely. But regardless, whether or not they have been, I would love some machine learning being brought to bear on getting those passwords updated and changed.
Mm-hmm.
That would be lovely. I mean, I guess it'd be kind of anything
that improves our security.
I guess it could be kind of scary to think of machine learning logging into our accounts and changing our passwords. Right? That definitely could go wrong too.
That can go horribly wrong.
But I would appreciate the help. Because like I've gone through my 1Password list of compromised accounts. And as I'm going through this long list, they're all accounts that are they're all passwords for accounts that I'm not using.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't reuse those passwords in the first place. And most of the
good for you.
Most of the companies were closed it or abandoned anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of gave up on going through it. It's like, I'll deal with this later. And I would love some machine learning help with that.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that being helpful. Like it goes through the list and it figures out which sites or services are no longer around. And then pulls those out of the list so you can look at those separately and just keeps filtering it out intelligently until you have the list of logins that you actually need to look at now.
Right. And then if it could help me log in and get that crap changed. I almost gave myself another edit. That would be good too. I can see AgileBits not wanting to take that power. I could definitely see that because that could be a liability issue. But anyway, that seems like a good opportunity for machine learning. And I had a good one. I had a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
Email summaries. So I'm pretty sure the email summaries are coming in this update we're going to see at WWDC. But what I mean by email summaries are, here are all the emails you've gotten today. Here are the ones you need to deal with.
I want to see that. And I want to be able to select a message that's part of like a long thread, and then have it summarize the whole conversation from all the threads.
Right. What I don't want is for Regurgibots to start talking to each other in email. That doesn't seem to be a reasonable solution for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yep.
But giving me the information, putting the information at my fingertips to help me make decisions, that would be glorious.
And to allow S-Lady to be able to handle more complex interactions. Mm-hmm. So instead of having to issue a series of individual requests, you can speak just a natural sentence like you would to another person that includes multiple things. And then it can parse that and
okay,
react appropriately to all those things.
What if that's what Apple was in negotiations with OpenAI or Google to handle? That would be very disappointing to me that Apple would need to outsource those kinds of capabilities. That would be very disappointing. It really seems to me that Apple shouldn't need help with that at this point. And it also seems like Apple should be, that we should already have more of those features built into Siri even now.
I agree. Yeah. When people say that Apple's voice assistant has fallen behind, I'm totally okay agreeing with that.
I hear you.
I accept your apology.
All right. Anyway, let's abandon that platform before I have to.
Before you have to make more edits?
Before I have to question everything. Let's talk about, you had a question about pens, didn't you?
I did. So finally, we get to the important part of
yes.
the show.
Yes.
All right. So it's no secret, because we've talked about fountain pens before, that I've gotten into the whole fountain pen thing.
And
you're and welcome. Yeah. So yeah. I blame you. I blame my friend that passed away and left me several fountain pens.
Yeah, I don't think I can get to actually take credit for this, which, believe me, is very difficult for me to say. But
you know, but if it's going to make you feel better, go ahead and take credit for it, because it won't change anything.
I mean, it's kind of funny that I was going on about fountain pens to you ad nauseum, and then you sort of came to them on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, go ahead, please.
Okay. So, so I'm enjoying using fountain pens, and at my desk, I use a Pilot Vanishing Point daily, and absolutely love this pen. So here's the thing. I'm at the point where I would love to just have a fountain pen with me all the time. Mm-hmm. Out and about, it's in my bag, it's in my pocket, whatever. I don't want to do that with my Vanishing Point. And not because I don't want to use it all the time. I do. It's that this is not a cheap pen. And I don't want to risk damaging, losing, or having it stolen. And so what I want is to find a fountain pen that I can just carry with me everywhere. It can live in my bag. It can live in my pocket. Doesn't matter. And it'll be durable. It'll write nice. And it's not going to cost a lot of money, because if it does get lost, stolen, or broken, I don't want to be out a lot of money.
Right.
So I need suggestions.
I probably should have let you ask this question without cutting you off pre-show, because the fountain pens that I know the most about are more vintage pens. So I suspect that anything you get in the, you know, $20 to $30 range will probably be just fine from a reputable brand like Parker or Pilot or.
Yeah. So Pilot, it's one of the companies that I've been considering. I'm already happy with the Pilot that I have. And let's see, there's the, what is it? Who makes the Plaisir?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah. Platinum. It's the Platinum Plaisir. Plaisir.
There it is. Huh. Okay.
And
right.
And I know a lot of people love the Kaweco Sport pens.
Okay. I honestly think that $20 to $30 range, you could even expand that and make it $20 to $40 range, that mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, both good and ill.
Okay.
And I mean, at that point, you could probably even pick the pen that you like, the best looks.
You know, that's a thing I've seen people saying online.
It's because that $20 to $40 range, that's enough to get it made reasonably well. And, you know, as long as you're not finding any reviews of it being a piece of crap, it's probably going to be just fine. And especially for a walking around pen.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, I would probably get a cartridge pen.
And that's something that I've been thinking about too, getting a cartridge pen for that.
By that, we're talking about fountain pens where you have a cartridge and you end up piercing that cartridge through an internal mechanism and the ink always stays in the cartridge. And once you pierce it's in the mechanism of the pen, but you're not having to, refilling it is about replacing the cartridge instead of refilling it from a
bottle. And in many cases you can actually have more ink available to you in the pen through a cartridge than if you're using a converter, which is the little piece that would go where the cartridge fits and lets you suck ink into the pen.
Yeah.
And so you just keep refilling it.
And I mean, we're also taught, like, if you hate the way it writes, this is going to be a really privileged beephole statement. But the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have to spend another 20 or 40 bucks for your walking around pen because you hate it.
And then, yeah. Now, I have considered turning my Lamy Safari into my walking around pen.
Okay. Why not?
Because I don't know if it's the right pen for that. Maybe it is. What I like, and this is one of those, apparently I have privilege moments where I can ask questions like, so this pen that I already have, should it be my go-to in my bag, carry it with me everywhere pen? Or should I get something else?
Why don't you try it?
Well, I have been carrying it around with me some. And this one is interesting. The Lamy Safari that I have, I ordered this one specifically because it has a left-handed nib. Mm. And I was thinking maybe this will make a difference in how the pen feels compared to the others that I have. Turns out, no, it makes no difference for me at all.
Interesting.
I put the cartridge in that came with the pen, which is blue ink. Mm. And I prefer black ink. So I need to.
Because you're a savage. Go ahead.
Because I'm a proper gentleman. So I need to burn through the blue ink in this pen so I can put a black cartridge in.
You could just change out the cartridge.
I don't want to waste the ink.
Okay.
But then
it could be forever.
Look, we both have our individual neuroses.
Okay, fair enough. But you're going to be forever at that, unless you wanted to like sit there and doodle,
which I can do a lot.
Fair enough.
But then I also have the pen that I bought before I started cleaning up the other pens to get them working again, mm-hmm. which is the Pilot Kakuno.
Okay.
And it's a great little pen. And it used cartridges with that one as well. So anyhow, I was just curious if you, or maybe our listeners, have suggestions for pens that I might want to try as my daily carry it around with me pen.
So, all right. So I would absolutely, in your situation, I would absolutely start off by carrying around the pens that I've got.
Okay. So I've started off the right way then.
And my question is, how are you actually using them out and about?
I do. So no secret between us, I think, that I've always had a thing for writing instruments. It's just the fountain pen part of it is new for me.
Yep.
And so I have always carried a pen or two and a little pocket size notebook, like a Moleskine or some other brand. And so, yeah, so that's the thing. So I'm writing all the time. And I'm one of those people that even though I have all this technology, I still want to write on paper a lot.
Fair enough. I get it. I'm not subject to it, but I get it.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I will continue down the path that I'm on, which is taking different pens with me when I'm out and about and seeing how I feel about them. And then if people have suggestions for inexpensive pens, okay. So here's the price cap that I'm putting on a pen like this. No more than $50 shipped.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, because this is your
which
this
is also a pen. Privileged thing again.
It is. That's true. And speaking of privilege. So my pen, I know I showed it to you. I think we might have even posted a picture, but it's the Parker Premier.
Uh-huh.
It's the that sparkly. It's the one made for the Chinese market, and it's got actual gold hardware on it, and it's like this sparkly brown and gold finish. And I love this pen, and it writes really well, and that's my daily driver.
It's a really cool pen.
And I don't actually go anywhere, so I don't need a walking around pen. But I did pick up two new vintage pens. And I blame mm-hmm. Nick, my dealer.
Yeah, I'll blame Nick for you as well. Sure.
So these are really, really interesting. I know you've seen pictures of them. They're really interesting. So first of all, they're lever filled pens. They're from the 20s and 30s. So they're basically 100 years old. We don't know specifically when. Now here is an interesting thing. They're made by two also rans back in the day. So, you know, there are brands like Wall or Parker or Schaefer that were, you know, and Mont Blanc, of course, that were, you know, killing it. But mm-hmm. there were tons of other companies too. And like one of these was made by the fourth biggest Canadian pen company at the time.
Ooh.
But they're really interesting because their bodies, we would assume they're plastic, but they're actually made out of rubber. This is before plastic was a thing.
That's a thing, which I didn't realize. There are a lot of pens that are made out of this hard rubber.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of pens that are there are so many of these old pens. And there's also pens that are made out of cellulose.
Yes.
So rubber and cellulose were the thing. So these have this elaborate gold fill sort of case that goes on top of these rubber bodies. And one of them is orange. And that was very uncommon because the vast majority of rubber pens were black, it turns out, at the time. And, okay. But you would assume looking at them that they're both made by the same company, but they're not. And I wasn't able, I asked Nick and who was copying whom, because I'm sure that someone was copying someone here. And it's possible both of these companies were copying yet a third. But let's see. The orange one is made by a company called Vigcont.
Okay, I've seen that name pop up.
And then the black one is made by a company called Eclipse. And it's they're I think they're beautiful. They're stunning. We've got a picture. Can we include that in the show notes?
Sure, of course we can.
And they're beautiful. And these are gold filled, which gold fill is in between gold plated and solid gold. So there's very, 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 very little actual gold here. But they're just so, and they work. They use a lever fill system. So you put the nib of the ink, and then you open the lever, and then you close it to fill it. They're 100 years old, and it works.
That's just so cool.
It is pretty cool. So anyway, I got those this week, and I was pretty excited by them.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
One of the pens that I have is it's a Mont Blanc Meisterstück pen, and I forgot which model it is. And I got it all cleaned up and then didn't do anything with it. And so
this is the one you were going to soak, right?
I did.
You soaked the nib.
The nib, yes. And I got it clean and it's working great. I put some ink in it. And there's this thing that I've seen online where people just really bag on Mont Blanc pens. You're like, well, you're just getting it because you want to be flashy and have a status thing. Well, it was a gift, so whatever. But
who the hell?
Holy crap, that pen writes so nice.
Awesome.
I'm just super happy with how that pen feels.
I like a pen that writes well.
Yeah, it's like surprisingly nice feel. Just so smooth. I'm really happy with that pen.
Cool.
All right, well, I will continue my journey. And I suppose this means that I better come up with what my what do they call it, everyday carry pen will be before July, or at least the middle of July, because that's when max stock is. And I'll be going.
Oh, cool.
Oh, did I tell you I'm speaking?
No.
Max stock didn't. Again this year?
That's great.
Oh.
What are you going to talk about?
It's, well, there's nothing on the website about my presentation yet, because apparently I still haven't written up the description, but I'll be talking about smart home stuff.
Excellent.
That's the nebulous description of what I'll be doing.
That's makes sense.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Good. All right. I think, oh, by the way, what ink have you settled on?
Hold on.
And have you actually settled, or you have some ink and you're using it?
Well, I think I've settled on this. The Pilot Irashizuku ink.
Pilot there we go. Okay, I found it. Found it with Pilot Space I. Oh yeah, that's a lovely bottle at the very least. That's gorgeous.
It's I have a bottle of the Takesumi, which is a black, because of course, and I just love it in my pens, and because it just looks so beautiful. I also have a bottle of red, and I forgot what they call the red, but so I have two bottles of the Iroshizuku ink.
That's
super happy with it.
At the very least, that's a gorgeous bottle.
If you look close at the bottle, at the bottom of it on the inside, it has a little dip down so that when you're dipping your pen in, you can actually get the pen tip at a lower point.
Oh, nice. So,
Yeah, nice little touch.
Pilot, they're a Japanese company, and they have not surprisingly, the Japanese take pens seriously.
Yeah, no surprise there.
Yeah. All right, that is, do they just have the three colors? By the way, I'm looking at—
Oh, no, they have a lot of colors.
I'm at the Gentleman Stationer site.
Oh, I've been there before.
They had, yeah. Because I don't know that I like this blue. Definitely don't like the green. I don't think I like the red either. These are just three colors, and I don't know what else they have.
I have the Momiji red, which I think is like a darker, richer red color.
Right. I like my red, blood red.
This one isn't blood red, but it's not fire engine red either.
Check out this bottle. Okay, check that out. This is a Caron d'Ache. We'll have a link to it, correct?
Mm-hmm.
From the Gentleman Stationer. But look at that angle.
Oh, I like the angle of the bottle.
That seems to me super clever. It's angled so that the lip is the opening is essentially facing you when you've got it open.
That's really nice. I like that.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. All right, so that's our dive into pens
for this week.
For this week, that's fair. And I guess I should probably do this. And that's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, the basses by Dr. Boom, recorded just for this show. And hey, where can we find you, Jeff?
Well, okay, when I'm not sitting here just hanging out with you.
Yeah. Which is all
rare moments. Yeah. So those rare moments where I'm not with you. Then how about on social media? Jay Gamut on Mastodon, Instagram, Threads, everywhere else. Same thing. Then for shows, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays. Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS on Thursdays. Then on the British Tech Network, The Big Show on Thursdays, The Mac Show on Fridays.
God, you were such a whore.
This is not new.
Oh, right.
We have known this for a long time.
Fair enough. And I love it. And you can find me at Geek Tells. That's T-E-L-L-S. And I am on mainly Threads, and I'm at geektells.com. So that's where I am. So that's it for this week, buddy.
Oh, that was loads of fun.